Hi, and welcome to A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast. My name is Michael Bates, and I'm here with trumpeter and composer Dave Douglas.
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Good. Good to be here.
This is the inaugural episode.
Very excited to be a part of it.
We'll be talking to Henry Threadgill today.
Yes.
Listening to his music.
One of my faves.
Yeah. Fantastic. I wanted to open this by talking about this experience I had last night. I went to hear a bunch of student groups at this incredible place called the Lagonde School of Music. It's in Elmsford, New York. Mm-hmm. And these are like, well, the youngest kids were probably 11 or 12.
Oh, wow.
But, great. You know, he had like 15 and 16-year-olds, and they were playing all this music from memory.
Wow.
And they're going through the set, and then suddenly, out of the blue, they're playing Palladium by Wayne Shorter from memory. And
wow.
It was just amazing. So I thought I would share that.
Nice. Henry Threadgill is an American composer, saxophonist, and flautist who has, for over 40 years, led a host of unusual ensembles. And now here is music by Henry Threadgill and a conversation Dave and I had with Henry himself.
It was really a sextet. It was seven people in the sextet because I always had two drummers.
Right, right.
And it took two drummers to play the two percussion parts, which was basically, I saw that as one part. You know what I'm saying? The percussion section is basically one part, you know. Brass section is two parts, because it's a trumpet and then a trombone, low brass and high brass, you know, and then the low string and high string with the bass and the cello, you know, and then I had the woodwinds, I covered the woodwinds.
Right.
So it was really a sextet. People thought that was some kind of joke that, you know, I was calling the seven. They were looking at you can have a quartet. You can have 40 harmonica players and you still got a quartet.
Right? That's it. But it's then about, you'd need a bigger trailer for sure.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, you got the bass, you know, tenor, alto, and soprano parts. It's a matter of parts, not about the amount of players, right? It's what the parts demand.
Interesting. So that had a lot to do with the way you were writing for the band, I'd imagine.
That piece kind of came out of the things I had learned about from from Rags, you know, the stuff that I did with Air, the Rag record.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the King Oliver stuff. I mean,
Scott Joplin. Scott
Joplin.
Played. Yeah.
You know, Jelly Roll Morton. Those people. That music. We had played that music for a very long time.
Mm.
And what I had learned about those forms,
mm-hmm.
I kind of carried that over. A lot of the stuff I had learned about those forms kind of came out in that Old Waters Quartet. Besides, I mean, it was like a march. It was a type of march piece, you know.
Yeah.
And I played in marching bands just about all my life in Chicago. See, those Rags were like kind of like miniature symphonies in terms of form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had all these different sections
where the keys change and where the
keys change, recapitulations and like variations on themes, all kinds of things like this. It was very similar to sonata forms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something different that was coming out of America. You know, it wasn't the large classical orchestral approach. It was like a miniaturized approach on a form level. All that counterpoint in there.
That's right.
You know, the that brass counterpoint, you know, where it's moving as opposed to what I'm playing and what the cello is playing, you know. First was a motorhome, and the second time we had a bus, you know, full size, you know, like a rock and roll bus,
uh-huh.
You know, with the driver and all.
Wow.
But it was, I mean, gas and stuff was much cheaper.
Right.
You know, and it was easy. The first one was really easy to do, more than the second one was more expensive, things were more expensive. I rented that motorhome way out in Jersey. Ashbury Park or something for about $5,000.
Wow.
For 2 months. And we went on the road for 2 months.
What kind of places did you play?
We played everything. Schoolhouses, clubs, colleges. See, the motorhome had, everybody had a bed. The shower, you know, television, refrigerator works, so that meant that what the idea was, people that couldn't afford to bring me, if we went past them, I could still play there and take the money and keep going. Because we didn't have to, if they couldn't afford to put us in the hotel, we just took the money and kept going. So we were able to make it all work. That was easy to make it work, because otherwise you couldn't go. You know how people call you to do stuff, they don't have enough money, transportation, they don't have a hotel. You know, so I said, well, if we're going past them, we just go ahead and play, you know.
And then pile back
and
into then, the
trailer. And get back in the bus. And see, was seven of us, and there's always two people on, one person driving, one person sitting beside them.
Right.
And it would be like another, if we kept driving nonstop, it would be almost 18 hours before you had, 18 to 20 hours before you had to come back to the wheel and drive only 3 hours.
That was everybody the tour.
Everybody drove three hours max. We played from Maine to Mexico.
Wow.
To Seattle to Atlanta.
To Santa Cruz. Yeah.
I decided I wasn't going to write any more drum parts, literally. But I was going to put that information down in a different kind of way and leave it up to the drummer to fill in a lot of things that I didn't want to notate. And I got rid of the bass and cello. That was a major thing.
You're laughing. You
know, because I've been working with basses and cellos for the longest, and like, now I had, you know, the two tubas and two guitars.
Right.
For harmonic and contrapuntal reasons, basically. The way I was writing from Air to the Sextet to Very, Very Circus, I was still writing in a major minor system, but it kept getting further and further out. I kept, you know, up to Make a Move. That was the last band. That was the end of, like, all major minor writing. I went as far as I could go. Back at Exacto and Very, Very Circus, I was just working out another approach with the tubas and guitars. This was the main thing. One guitar, one tuba. One guitar, that's how they were matched. They'd be doing different things, but it was like, that's how it was like. That was the basis up under which everything was based. Mm-hmm. Guitar and tuba, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that was the first Very, Very Circus record, the ones with the Exacto.
Yeah.
And we went a long way from there to the last one. You know what I'm saying? It was like a. Like Marcus probably told you, it was a lot to work out with those tubas, with two tubas, too, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes in unison, sometimes half steps, with all kinds of different arrangements, you know. Stretched it all the way. I couldn't go any further until I got to Zuit. I got completely away from the major minor system into a new system of chromaticism that's not based in any of these things that I was doing before.
Thank you.
pursue it, then it's a completely whole nother rhythmic approach in terms of the low end. Mm-hmm. What happens, it's no longer anything traditional about the way the low end plays rhythmically. Like I said, this is this chromatic language that's based in intervals.
Yeah. You know, Brandon showed me a little bit about how that works, but
right.
But on this particular track, it seems like it's hard to figure out how things are
synchronized.
Who's
playing what?
Yeah,
right.
How it's moving. How did right. you, what yeah. were you thinking
well,
about?
Well, see, the stuff that we do now, the Zouk music is like modular music.
Mm. What do you mean by that?
That means that, like, everything can be moved around. In other words, just look at your hand. If you took your, change your thumb and your little finger. You change any two fingers, you can change everything. It's still on your hand. It hasn't gone anywhere. It's still on your hand. It's still your hand, the same fingers. They've just been moved around. Mm-hmm. And you can even take one off and don't use it. That's modular. You mm-hmm. don't have to use everything that's there, but, like, you can't put anything new on the table. Whatever's on the table once it's all there, it's organically connected. Mm-hmm. So you can move it all around musically, mm-hmm. you know, because everything is done from a musical point of view. So we use what we want to use at any time.
And everybody in the band is free to move those modules around.
Yeah, but we generally decide on what we're going to, like, we play a piece one way, and then we come back and we start rehearsing again, mm-hmm. and we're not going to, generally, we start out the way we started out in the past, but then we look for another format, another way to play it. So everything starts getting changed and dropped and moved around. That recorded version of So Please, that was a very reduced version of it. It's a much larger piece. And the form is a result of all that.
Right. It's a great performance.
You know, the form is it's always, in all of the music I've always written, form is always a result of. I never start out with form. Hmm. I let form come into it as a reality of what I've come to. You know, what the music, after I work the music out, that's what the form would be. I don't impose form.
Right.
I let the form come out of it, you know. Well, Zouk is about like something with a lot of heads on it.
Multi-directional.
Yeah, because like everybody can play in different is playing different parts. What we do is like it's like, you know, like in a tone roll.
Yeah.
You know what a tone roll is, right? Well, a tone roll is like a series of notes, singular pitches. We're playing series of intervals. If you thought about like each one note was in a tone roll was equal to 5 to 7 intervals. So what I have is like a set of intervals, and then we move to another set of intervals, then another set of intervals, till we get to the end of the piece. Mm. So, and those intervals are controlling all of the harmonic and all of the voice leading.
Right, and each player is drawing on that list of intervals as
right.
they go along.
Right.
They don't
right.
have to play everything, but anything
no.
they do play
right.
has
right.
to come out of that
right.
series of
yeah, the, all the music is written from there, but now... We can do things now on an improvisational level. These guys have learned this stuff so well. We've been doing this for a long time now. Mm-hmm. we can even discard, anybody can discard all of that information when they get ready. But they know how to do that. You have to write music down in some kind of order. That is not the last order or order that we might even play it in the first time.
Right.
But you have to start somewhere. So, like, at the rehearsals, we explore. We don't really, like, read from left to right. So you read that right, so, okay. If you did that in most rehearsals, you can get up and go home. Am I correct?
Yes.
You read the music from left to right, you can make them so get up and go home.
I know what
you
mean.
There's nothing else to do. But we only do that to get started.
Right.
Now we're going to find out what can we do with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to get musicians to play very new and creative ideas once you play something and you go back and do it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The person tends to imitate themselves in some kind of way. They say, oh, your subconscious will remember that you played something that worked.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll reach for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like comfort food or something.
Right. So you're trying to create a way to take that comfort
away.
Right.
Going back. Right. To try to do something in the moment, spontaneous.
Right. Yeah.
In the moment, you know, and not rely on keep people out of position where they can rely on what they did before,
right.
or. Have the change the arrangement so that they can't even so that it'll be new the arrangement. Like I said, you look at your hand and you see your thumb right there. Now you look at it and it's your little finger right there.
Right. So
you say, uh-oh. Now what am I going to do?
Thank you so much for your time. It's really inspiring to hear you talk about the music. But I had picked out this other piece that I think maybe comes from a different sort of writing for you. This piece, Over the River Club, that you recorded, I guess, in around 93?
Right.
Is that something like that?
Something like that. Yeah, that's the Song Out of My Trees record.
Yeah.
Right, with all those different
each piece, yeah, it's a different ensemble, and this one features Myra Melford on piano, but you've got
four
different kinds of guitars, alto guitar, soprano guitar, and
traditional, and then bass guitar.
It's a beautiful, beautiful piece, and I'm just wondering.
I'd always wanted to write a piece of music for piano. That's the first thing. I mean, you know, when I went to school, you know, there's no such thing as no jazz programs, and you couldn't no such thing as majoring in no saxophone. That was considered a bastard instrument. You studied clarinet. and if you studied, and I was in woodwind, so I studied from clarinet to flute, but like when I switched to composition, if you were a composition major, that meant that you were a piano major. That means you had to be able to play like piano, like somebody was going to be a piano major. That was an ass kicker. Jesus Christ. That was unreasonable. But the hard thing is, the piano has got so much literature, and it goes back so far. We've heard so much music on piano that when you go to sit down and try to write for piano, you say, damn, everything has been covered, hasn't it?
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? You know, you heard Liszt, you heard Bud Powell. Who? Who didn't you hear? Chopin or John Lewis? What didn't you hear? You know, Henry Butler, who didn't you hear? You know, what is it you don't get here? It takes us a year almost to learn a piece of music. Hmm. At least about a year we have to play it before we start really getting control of it and knowing that we can, you know, can do things with it. Just left to right is nothing. But when I start moving stuff around and cutting things out, and that also means expansion and contraction. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I say modulation, that means like you look at your thumb, and that next time is twice that size.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Wait a minute, it's still on your hand, though. No?
And you were just listening to a conversation between Dave Douglas and Henry Threadgill, and a very special thank you to Henry Threadgill for joining us here at A Noise from the Deep, the Green Leaf Music Podcast. If you'd like information about the songs that we played in that segment, as well as all the other songs in between the different segments here on the podcast, please feel free to check the show notes, and as well, visit us at greenleafmusic.com.
One of the things I wanted to talk about on the podcast is, you know, unusual venues, places we've played that are doing something different and something really interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, the first thing that comes to mind is that festival in Trentino, I Suoni delle Dolomiti.
And this is in Italy.
It's in Italy. Right, it's the sound of the Dolomites.
Yes, and you have to hike up.
You have to hike up. You know, that's the festival that invited me to write the music for Mountain Passages.
Right.
The pictures on there are from that festival.
So you're playing with the Mountain Passages band in the middle of a big field with a bunch of rocks. Mountains are all around. Super
correct.
Beautiful.
Correct. Wow. After a 3-hour hike, which is sort of the most ridiculous thing about it. And the first time I did it, I just thought, oh my God, this is sort of crazy. Why would anyone do this? And then you get up there, and there's 1,200 people that also hiked.
The footage that I have seen of performances up there, there are huge, huge audiences.
It's fantastic. And, you know, the thing about it for me is you're really sharing the music on this intimate level with people. There's nothing between you and them. And
considerable effort to get there.
So a lot, really. A lot of effort to get there, and also, you know, the music that you play is going to be different. The music that I wrote for them was really, you know, especially for that environment.
Right.
And they do that with dozens of artists.
A variety of different
lots of different
styles
kinds
of music.
Right.
Nice.
So that's a wonderful thing. And I'm working on trying to find places in the U.S. where one could do that.
Yes.
You know, there's the weather is always variable, and finding the right place where the hike is far enough out, but not so far that it's impossible to get to. You know, anyone can go hike up Everest and play at the top, but, you know, if no one's there to hear it, does
exactly.
That really?
I was about to say the exact same thing. You're You're listening to A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast. And my name is Michael Bates, and this is trumpeter and composer Dave Douglas. And he has this label called Greenleaf. You have a bunch of new stuff happening at the, over at the label and at the website?
We do, and I should mention that we also have a couple of great records of yours. Michael Bates happens to be a bassist and composer as well.
Well, thank you. Yes.
Yes, we have a new record of mine that's coming out that's called Time Travel, and it's my new quintet, and we'll be playing Jazz Standard from March 28th to March 31st.
Nice.
And if you are listening to this in the future, we're talking about 2013, so if you're traveling back in time to hear this podcast... That's sort of what that's
That would be a reason
about.
To pick 2013 New York City to actually
that's
come back.
That's a good
back,
place to right? come back yeah, to, yeah. yeah it's a good place to visit.
Yes.
And the band is John Arabigan and Matt Mitchell on piano, right. Linda O and Rudy Royston.
Yeah.
Fantastic group right, so. And very inspiring.
And this is the second release for that band.
That's right. The first one was called Be Still, and we had the special guest, the vocalist Aoife O'Donovan.
Nice. Great.
What about you? Where are you playing?
I am, you know, doing my local sideman stuff, and then this summer I'll be touring with a new quartet called the Relative Quartet with Chet Doxis, who you have recently recorded with, mm-hmm. I believe, and John mm-hmm. Stetch and Owen Howard, and recently did an album with a large ensemble called the Brian Carpenter's Ghost Train Orchestra,
wow.
and they're going to be touring a bunch this summer, too. So
I look forward to hearing that.
Yeah.
So you just mentioned you're playing in all these places around Brooklyn, and I used to live there, and I don't anymore, but, you know, I'm a little jealous because there's so many places there now, and it wasn't exactly like that when I was living there.
Wow, it's hopping now, that is for sure.
So what are some of the places where people are playing?
Well, there's a bit of, you know, there's a lot, a big DIY kind of thing happening in Brooklyn, and I don't know if any of these places are particularly unusual, and I don't think, you know... House concerts are something that are new by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, all the loft concerts, back in the day in Soho, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Were around. But I have a good friend named Jesse Stacken who has just a beautiful house in Ditmas Park that he rents, and it's big, and they have a grand piano in the living room, and so every month they put on a concert, and there are two different bands or two different artists will play, and
he's
they have
a player too.
Piano player, great yeah, piano great. Player. And they have a vegan feast, and people come and they donate a little bit, and you know, it's sort of a suggested donation, and, wow. and it's an incredible, very intimate setting. I've played there and had a great time. Another one similar to that is a place called Seeds, and that's run by a saxophone player and composer, Ohad Talmor, and it's every Wednesday night in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn, and it's, again, a really beautiful setting, small, intimate. And all sorts of people play there. You know, I've seen Gerald Cleaver and Tim Byrne and Matt Mitchell and a whole host of the characters that are on the Brooklyn and New York scene now. Mm-hmm. Then there are two other venues called I-Beam and Douglas Street, and those are, in a way, collectively run, artist-run mm-hmm. spaces that are curated by the people involved with it. Mm-hmm. And it's created... a scene that, you know, is self-directed and creative, and we're not having to answer to club owners and whatever. So it's it's great. It's really a lot of fun. So Shapeshifter, Matt Garrison's
right. Spot, I was gonna say spot. Great spot.
Yeah, and that, I mean that's a little sort of on a bigger scale, and it and done so well, mm-hmm. and the venue mm-hmm. is just beautiful, artistic, yeah. and again. You know, I saw Clarence and Uri Kane and Mark Elias play there recently, and mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, everything under
that
the sun.
That would be Clarence Penn, I imagine.
Yes, Clarence yeah. Penn, you know.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, and that doesn't include places like Corzo and Sanctuary,
yep.
and Sista's Place.
Sista's
and,
Place.
You know, it's just a vast scene. It's really a fantastic time for the music, I think.
Certainly is.
Thanks for listening to A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast.
I'm Michael Bates.
I'm Dave Douglas.
And we'll be back again soon.